Many times when we know someone who has succumbed to a sickness and did so very, very quickly without really any sign whatsoever that there was anything wrong, we'll sometimes say that that person was a victim of a silent killer. Sometimes heart disease is that way. In fact, just this morning there was an article in the paper about a 39-year-old man who died of a heart condition. Seemed to be the picture of health. Seemed like everything was okay. And those kinds of stories are not unusual. Because many times when there are things going on inside us, they're really doing us great damage and we're really unaware of it, leading us then to our deaths. This morning, I would encourage us to think about things that are even more serious than that. Because just as there are things that can take us down physically, I believe even more so there are those kinds of things that will take us down spiritually. Things that are going on inside of us, things that we're allowing to dwell within our hearts that are absolutely killing us, but yet we're not doing a whole lot about it. And I suppose as we think about those things, one of the greatest of those is just the simple fact of holding a grudge, holding a resentment against someone else. A man by the name of McCaulkie McCourt, and he once said, resentment is like taking poison and waiting for the other person to die. And I thought that was a very good description of really what a grudge is like. It's something that we are holding against someone else, but in all reality, what's going on is it's killing us spiritually. It's bringing us to our spiritual demise. There is no such place in the life of a Christian for these things. Yet we know how easy it is to fall prey to those kinds of things. So this morning, I'd like for us to talk about refraining from that, looking at what it can do, and then looking at the kinds of things that we can practice to keep ourselves from falling prey to such. And as we consider this topic this morning, I want us to talk about two different Sauls. And I want us to see how that each of these Sauls shows us a way of dealing with a grudge. One correctly, one incorrectly. And so this morning, go ahead with me, if you will, over to 1 Samuel chapter 18. 1 Samuel chapter 18, and we're going to begin there as we look at King Saul. I don't want to go through a lot of detail of King Saul's life, but we all know, if we've studied him in any depth, he had very great opportunities, didn't he? God had established him as the first king over Israel. He had made a promise to him that if he would be faithful to him, that he would establish him and his family after him to have a monarchy here within the land of Israel. But Saul didn't do that. Saul agreed with God as long as God didn't disagree with Saul. And whenever there was a parting of attitude, Saul went on his own way. And we understand that God established someone new, said there would be someone else who would take Saul's place, and so Saul was deeply suspicious. And as we come to 1 Samuel chapter 18, what we find here is that Saul and David had been out in battle together. And they're coming home victorious from this battle. And the women of Israel develop a most unfortunate song that they sing. And as we look here in chapter 18, verse 6 tells us, as they were coming home, when David returned from striking down the Philistine, the women came out of the cities of Israel singing and dancing to meet King Saul, with tambourines, with songs of joy, and with musical instruments. And the women sang to one another as they celebrated, Saul has struck down his thousands, and David his 10,000s. They should not have sung this song. The women of Israel were showing very great disregard for their king, whether they intended to do that or not. That being said, though, the reaction that King Saul has does not bespeak a man of maturity, does not bespeak of a leader who understood the great gift that he had been given in the fact that David was fighting with him instead of against him. A man of maturity would have said, I'm glad to have a soldier like this. I'm glad to have someone who is even outshining me on the battlefield. But that was not King Saul. And at this point, with his suspicions already there, Saul develops a grudge toward David that is going to lead him to descend into the pits of darkness. As we begin looking at King Saul's life, he continues going further and further away from God into this grudge that's going to bring him even against his own family. In fact, just looking down through his life, as he seeks to do away with David, to end this one against whom he has this grudge, this resentment, it brings him to use his daughter as bait. Look here in chapter 18, going over to verse 20. It says, "Now Saul's daughter Michal loved David, and they told David, and the thing pleased him. Saul thought, 'Let me give her to him, that she may be a snare for him, and that the hand of the Philistines may be against him.' Therefore Saul said to David a second time, 'You shall now be my son-in-law.'" With two of his daughters, he had tried to lure David into a situation where David would be struck down and killed. Now, I know those of you with daughters can't even imagine the concept that you take who your daughter marries so lightly that you would use her in some kind of way to get at your enemy, to get back at someone against whom you so totally resented. But that describes what King Saul was doing. But it gets even worse. We know that Saul's son Jonathan and David had become very good friends. And that friendship is going to lead King Saul to the point that he tries to kill his own son. Let's look over to chapter 20, going down to verses 32 and 33. Here Jonathan is defending David before his father. And we look at verse 32, "Jonathan answered Saul his father, 'Why should he,'" talking about David, "'be put to death? What has he done?' Verse 33, "But Saul hurled his spear at him to strike him." So Jonathan knew that his father was determined to put David to death. We come to a point now where Saul had descended into this neurotic state that he was so intent on killing David that when his son gives some kind of word in favor of David, Saul's first reaction is to try to kill his son. His daughters, his son, no one is safe, including his own kingdom. As we'll look at a little bit later on, his desire to get rid of David becomes so great that his own people are ignored. And so you put all of this together, and what do you find? His grudge was spiritually crippling. Saul had disobeyed God. He was taking out that punishment on David. He had disregarded David as a friend, as an ally. And in everything he was doing, he was trying to kill this young man. And a very bitter, spiritually weak man ends his life with a self-inflicted sword wound. But I think even before that, he had died spiritually because of the attitudes that he held in his heart. But there's another Saul that we read about. However, we know him a little bit better as the Apostle Paul. A man who started out as Saul, but when he went to his ministry with the Gentiles, his name was changed. And here was a man who very well knew what a hard life was like. In fact, the situation that we're going to look at this morning is found over in the book of Philippians. And as we look at the book of Philippians, we find that the apostle had been imprisoned not for anything bad that he had done, but because he was standing up for his faith. Because he willingly went before others and said, "I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God." And because of that, he was thrown in prison. To make matters worse, here is the Apostle Paul who is in prison for his beliefs, and there are those on the outside of his brethren, fellow Christians, who were seeking to bring him down. Let's look in chapter 1, beginning in verse 14. Chapter 1, beginning in verse 14. It says, "And most of the brothers, having become confident in the Lord by my imprisonment, are much more bold to speak the word without fear. Some indeed preach Christ from envy and rivalry, but others from goodwill. The latter do it out of love, knowing that I am put here for the defense of the gospel. And now, note verse 17. The former proclaim Christ out of rivalry, not sincerely, but thinking to afflict me in my imprisonment. So here is the Apostle Paul. He's in prison. And he says, there are those on the outside who are trying to do me harm. In fact, I understand that perhaps when we read this particular passage, if this was literally translated, it would say they are trying to make my chains chafe. Can you imagine? Here's a man who is in prison for his beliefs, and his language says what they're really trying to do is to come and grind those chains a little bit deeper within me. Here was a man who certainly had the right to be angry. A man who had the right to bear a grudge. Why? Because these others were wanting to boost themselves at his expense. Now, what was going on? I don't know. I've heard a lot of different ideas about this passage of what was being done and what was being said and why it was being done. I'm just going to leave you with this. It was something that was very much aimed against the Apostle Paul. There were those who were using Christ, the preaching of Jesus Christ's name, to somehow get at the Apostle Paul. I tell you, there are many preachers who in far greater circumstances would have a grudge, and they would nurse this grudge against someone who was trying to do that to them. But what about the Apostle Paul? Look in verse 18. After he says all of this, he says, what then? Only that in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is proclaimed, and in that I rejoice. You want to talk about a mature man? Here he is. First of all, notice there is the complete absence of any name here, isn't there? He doesn't say, well, old brother so-and-so is doing this to me, but I'm going to forgive him for that. No. He mentions no names. And he says there are those who are preaching, and they're doing it out of pretense, and they're doing it to harm me. But he says, as long as Christ is being preached, with that, I can rejoice. There was no grudge. Only happiness that Christ was being glorified. Two men separated by lots of years. Two men in very different circumstances. Two men who were facing very different situations. But yet, both of these men had the same challenge. How would they deal with something that at least they felt in the case of King Saul and that they knew in the case of the Apostle Paul was aimed at them? What made the difference in the choices that they pursued? Well, I would suggest to you that the first thing was their attitude toward self. As they looked at their own lives, as they looked at their own situations, how they reacted to that made all the difference. We think about the Apostle Paul. He fell prey to perhaps the oldest of sins, and that being the sin of pride. The sin that nobody is going to do to me what I don't allow them to do. It's interesting as we look in the Bible that from cover to cover, God warns about the sin of pride. Have you ever noticed that? I would say as much as any sin we can find throughout the Bible, God warns about pride. We could look at a number of passages, but think about just a couple with me this morning. Proverbs chapter 8, verse 13. He says, the fear of the Lord is hatred of evil. But now notice this. Pride and arrogance and the way of evil and perverted speech I hate. God reserves the words I hate for very serious things. When God says, when God has recorded for us something that He hates, we had better pay attention to it. And God says, when I think about pride and when I think about arrogance, I hate those attitudes. Why? Because of what it does to mankind. Because of what it does to our attitude toward self. On over in the book, chapter 29 and verse 23, Solomon says, one's pride will bring him low, but he who is lowly in spirit will obtain honor. With every example, God shows us that nothing good can come when we value ourselves too highly. When pride has encompassed our hearts, we're going to hold anyone suspect who does not have the same high opinion of us that we have of ourselves. Isn't that right? When we allow pride to control our lives, if someone doesn't think we're the greatest, then we wonder what their problem really is. Isn't that the case with Saul? As those women were singing that song, all he could think about was himself. How he was being brought down. How he was being dishonored. Yet you consider the difference when humility is present. You look at the Apostle Paul and he says, like the Lord himself, I can let certain things go so that a greater good can be accomplished. Why didn't Jesus Christ strike down everyone who said a word against him? Why didn't Jesus Christ strike down anyone who did not accept his gospel? Why didn't he strike down the ones who spat upon him, who cursed him? There was a greater good. And Jesus himself said, I am going to go through with this with the right attitude because this is the way that mankind can be saved. And what a worthy example the Apostle Paul sets for us as we think about how he illustrated that Christ-likeness in his own attitude towards himself. But let's look at another attitude. Not only was it his attitude toward himself, it was also the attitude toward others. I want us to think about the king Saul, just a minute with this. And if you will, go back with me to 1 Samuel chapter 23. 1 Samuel chapter 23. Several things have happened in the meantime from where we read earlier to where we're picking up now. But what's going on is Saul has taken much of his army and they're out hunting for David. It's come to the point where David is hiding out on the mountains. In fact, he'll say to the king, I'm a flea. I'm a dead dog. Why do you pursue me like this? And I want you to note what goes on here as we look in chapter 23 down to verse 26. Saul went on one side of the mountain and David and his men on the other side of the mountain. And David was hurrying to get away from Saul. As Saul and his men were closing in on David and his men to capture them, a message came to Saul saying, hurry and come, for the Philistines have made a raid against the land. Do you see how far this grudge had taken it? This had become such an obsession with him that he had the army chasing after David. And the Philistines say, this is our time to go. Israel is weak. The army is not ready. They're off guard. Let's take the opportunity and go. Saul had no concern for his countrymen. Here was a king that was so intent on carrying out his vendetta that he had allowed those, his own people, to be in danger of attack. That's what can happen when we allow a grudge to go too far. And that is certainly the case when it comes to Christians. When you and I think about our own attitudes toward each other, we need to understand the problems that we can create for others because of what we feel like is a personal slight against us. And that just simply cannot be the case with us. I think about what Peter wrote in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 1. He said to those who are of Christ, so put away all malice and all deceit and hypocrisy and envy and all slander. He says you need to be concerned about others. Anything that would cause you to have the wrong attitude, put it away. As Paul looked out for the welfare of the others, so must we. But I think more than anything else is the attitude that these two men had towards God. What caused them to react the way they did? What caused one to go into this dark, vengeful attitude? What caused the other to say, as long as Christ is glorified, I'm not worried about myself? It was their attitude towards God. And just as we talked about with our attitude towards self, pride will destroy our relationship with God. Because God has said He simply will not tolerate a heart that looks to put itself above Him. And that's what happens with pride. That's elevating our worth. It's saying that we're more important than others. And if we're not careful, we say we're more important than God Himself. That's what we've got to avoid. I want you to notice a couple of things that the Lord told to Israel a long time ago. He said in Isaiah chapter 2 and verse 11, "The haughty looks of man shall be brought low, and the lofty pride of men shall be humbled, and the Lord alone will be exalted in that day." We see another prophet who said something very similar. Chapter 7 of Hosea, verse 10, "The pride of Israel testifies to His face, yet they do not return to the Lord their God, nor seek Him for all of this." God said to Israel, "You want to know what your problem is? It's the fact that you will not humble yourselves to see who God is and who the followers of God are. You want to reverse that. You want to be in charge telling me what to do." And God says, "I simply will not tolerate that." And so we see the one who truly seeks to honor God is the one who can overcome personal slights in order that He is glorified. Okay. That's the academic part of the lesson. That's the problem. Now, in our last 2 or 3 minutes, what do we do about it? We know holding a grudge is a problem. We see the dangers. We know that resentment kills. But this morning, if I'm grappling with a grudge towards someone, there is a major distinction between knowing what to do and doing it. Of knowing what the Lord has said and carrying that out. So if I'm in that situation this morning, what do I do? Well, the first thing is we don't let a grudge take up residence. I don't know who originated the quote, but I read somewhere that a grudge is like renting out your mind to someone else for free. And that's right. Because we're spending our thoughts and we're letting it just consume us. We're letting it become something that it doesn't need to be. So, what are my alternatives? Well, first of all, I need to very honestly ask myself, is this really a big deal? Is this something where someone has sinned against me? Is this something that could damage someone else's soul? And if I very honestly answer that and say, no, not really. This was something that perhaps I misunderstood, or something that was said that came across the wrong way, or whatever, I let it go. I'm done with it. It's released. It's no longer holding me back. As well, I need to also understand that none of us are innocent in these kinds of things. You know, we can arch our backs up and we can say all the how dare yous we want because we feel like someone has offended us. And we forget about all those times when maybe we were misunderstood, or perhaps when we were understood quite clearly in the intent that we had. I think about what Solomon said over in the book of Ecclesiastes chapter 7. He said, "Surely there is not a righteous man on earth who does good and never sins. Do not take to heart all the things that people say, lest you hear your servant cursing you. Your heart knows that many times you yourself have cursed others." He says, before you get all bent out of shape over something, remember that that person's as human as you are. And that person is wanting forgiveness just like you want that forgiveness. And wants understanding just as you want understanding. And so perhaps if we've got this grudge, this resentment that has taken up residence, we first of all say it's not that big a deal. And we also say, I understand that I've done things like that as well. Secondly, it just simply comes to the point of working out the problem and moving on. Now maybe that's something that we've got to handle on our own. There may be someone who is quite innocent in a matter that we took to heart. And after careful and mature thinking about it, we understand that there was really no harm intended there. And so in our own minds, we say, it's gone. I'm not dealing with this anymore. I'm moving on. I'm not letting it take up residence in my mind. But what if it was more serious than that? What if it really is a difficulty with a brother? A difficulty with someone and there is sin involved. There is someone who needs to make changes. Well, the Lord instructs us on that. And He says the first step you need to take is this. So if you're offering your gift at the altar, and there you remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother and then come and offer your gift. The Lord says, before you approach me in worship, you've got to have your heart right. And part of having your heart right is if there's a problem with you and a brother. He has something against you. You've done something to him, or he thinks you've done something to him. Stop your worship. Go deal with the problem. Get it straightened out. Then come back. And your heart can be attuned to right things. And how do we do that? He tells us that as well. Chapter 18 of Matthew, verse 15. If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he listens to you, you've gained your brother. You're not a person who announces all the way to the brother's house what he's done and how you're going to forgive him and how magnanimous a person you are for going to this brother who's done you so wrong. No. We keep our mouth shut till we get to our brother. We straighten it out and we go on our way. The grudge gone. The hard feelings gone. The sin taken care of. And the Lord says, then things are right with your soul. And ultimately, it comes to not only clearing out those things, but also saying, I'm going to let spiritual things reside where those worldly principles resided. You see, when I have negative feelings, when I'm having these feelings that are killing me spiritually, I replace those. Isn't that what Kenny read to us this morning? Did you note that in Philippians chapter 4? When he says, when you're thinking about these things that surpass understanding, what do you need to focus your mind on? Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable. Think on these things. Now, read that verse and tell me which of those allows for resentment. Which of these principles that we're thinking on allows us to hold within our minds bad feelings towards someone else? Is it the idea of being honorable? No. Just? No. Pure? No. None of them. The Apostle Paul tells us in the same book where he just said there were those who were doing bad things to him, the way you get over that is you dwell on good things. That's how you overcome. And when we do this, these ideals will permeate our hearts and we'll replace those negative thoughts with very positive actions. So as we consider all of these things, both the academic and the practical, the question really boils down to, is there a grudge within my life that needs to be resolved? Is there something that I need to deal with? Now, I tell you, a lot of times when I preach a lesson like this, somebody will say, do you know something I don't know? You know, is there something going on that we need to be aware of? No, I don't know of any big grudges against anybody here. But what I do know is that this is one of the easiest sins to fall into because it's an easy sin. We don't have to talk about it. Nobody's going to know. We can smile. We can look healthy. But on the inside, we're dying. And so I would encourage any of us here this morning, if there is something that we have been offended by, if there's something that we've been nursing for a month, for a year, for a decade, today's the day to get that straightened out. Today's the day to say, I'm putting those kinds of things away, and like the Apostle Paul, I want Christ for every man. That's the encouragement that the Apostle Paul would give us, the man who knew how to deal with these situations. As we close, let me say this. It's a very good thing that God doesn't hold grudges, isn't it? Because if He did, all of us would be in horrible shape. The Lord says, I know what you've done to me, but if you'll repent and you'll be baptized, all of those things are forgotten, thrown into the depths of the sea. This morning, if there's sin in your life, if you're ready to become a Christian or you need to straighten out your life with the Lord, now's the time to do that. Now's the time to be right with Him. Won't you come as we stand and sing together?